Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about enabling the blind to use touch screens. We'll meet Sean Kane, who's been doing research in this area, and talk about his research and talk about his experience using that research to participate in the annual Imagine Cup. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip is that although when a new technology comes out, it may seem impossible to use with a visual impairment, just be a little bit patient because newer technology usually shows up that can enable you to do so.
Yeah, it seems these days there's always something new, isn't there? I mean, every few months people are coming out with faster and better computers, new applications, new kinds of devices and stuff like that. And, you know, you may think that what you're using now works fine. And sometimes that's the case, and it's not worth changing. On the other hand, some of these newer technologies really do offer some interesting new capabilities and efficiencies and ways of doing things, and you might want to try them out. You got to be a bit intrepid, I guess, to try them out and actually put in a little bit of work to learn the technologies, figure out what it's all about, and don't be disappointed if it doesn't work the first time. Usually things just take a little experimentation.
I remember years ago when Xerox decided that everybody was going to switch to using computers that ran Windows. And Pete had a pretty good reputation around work about knowing his way around a computer and was very facile in DOS and in Unix and several other operating systems that nobody remembers anymore. But then we all had to switch to using Windows. And one of his closest colleagues cornered me in the hall and said, well, now Pete's really sunk. He'll never be able to make this work. And, you know, I just turned to this guy and I said, look, I have no idea how he's going to make it work, but I assume he will find a way to make it work. And sure enough, it was newer technology that enabled him to make it work.
Well, and the first thing I did was, you know, really learn as much as I could about the new operating system, which was Windows at the time, and how it was supposed to work. And reading the documentation can be very helpful. I know people hate to do that, and no one opens user manuals these days, hardly at all. But, you know, to me, that was pretty important to know how it was supposed to work, what were the capabilities, and what did they expect it to do. And then the next thing was to do was to find a screen reader that actually worked with Windows. And at the time, there weren't many made for it. And it was quite a frustrating experience and a lot of work to try out different screen readers and figure out one that accomplished the things I needed to do with it. So I must have tried four or five before I finally settled on JAWS, which was what I started using then and I still use these days. But it does take a lot of work, and you got to be persistent. You got to be willing to put in a little perspiration and effort to work it out.
And sure enough, within a month or two, everybody up and down the hall at work was going to Pete's office. Hey, Pete, how do you make Windows do this? How do you make Windows do that? I can't make it do the other thing. And, you know, Pete knew.
It was pretty funny, yeah. So, you know, it took a bit of an effort again. Nothing like that comes for free. You just can't walk into it and expect it to work.
So we'll be meeting Sean Kane in just a minute or so, but he chimed in with a thought that pretty much mirrors our thoughts.
I feel it's important to have a little bit of rebelliousness in your spirit and say, no, of course I'm going to do this. You know, and I'm not, of course, it's going to be, you know, I might have to work harder, but I'm going to do it.
And that's often what it takes. You just got to put in the effort and work a little harder.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Sean Kane. But we want to start by telling you how we met Sean, which was through Jeff Bigham, who we highlighted in show number 1132 on novel software being developed for accessibility. Little did we know we were going to run into somebody else whose show could very easily fit the same title. But we've stayed in touch with Jeff Bigham, who's a professor at the University of Rochester doing research on making technology accessible to the visually impaired, and he had invited Sean Kane to give a presentation on his research and contacted us ahead of time and said, hey, you know, I think you'd be interested in hearing this talk by Sean. And we said, great, can we have half an hour to talk to him before the talk? And we set that up and we got to meet Sean, and that was really terrific. Now you get to meet him.
My name is Sean Kane. I am an assistant professor at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which we call UMBC. And I finished my PhD at the University of Washington this July. So I'm a brand new professor.
So as we said, Sean and Jeff used to work together, and it was great to see them interacting again. They're both pretty dynamic people and are doing some very interesting work in accessibility.
Now, most of the people that we interview for this show have some form of visual disability. Sean is fully sighted, but he's got different kinds of disabilities.
It's tough to describe via audio because there's not a well-defined condition, but I have a physical disability that affects both my hands and my legs. So my legs are shorter, and so it takes me a while to walk places, although I really enjoy walking, and I have the use of just one of my hands and three fingers on that hand. Fortunately, in my line of work, I'm quite competent and able to do just about everything that I need to do, and certainly that also involves being adventurous a little bit. So we've been doing some things in my research lab recently, building hardware. So we're doing woodworking and, you know, sawing and moving heavy things around and all those things, which are quite tiring but also a lot of fun. And of course, I feel it's important to have a little bit of rebelliousness in your spirit and say, no, of course I'm going to do this. You know, it's going to be, you know, I might have to work harder, but I'm going to do it.
So do you use mostly like speech input with Dragon and stuff, or you just duke it out with the keyboard?
In terms of using the computer, I don't really use any AT. I use sticky keys on my Mac, and that's pretty much it. So I use type on a QWERTY keyboard and use a touchpad or a mouse, and fortunately I've been quite successful at that. And you know, I've had throughout my life people saying, oh no, that's the wrong way to do it. Oh, you should learn Dvorak typing, for example, because that was designed for typing with one hand and it's going to be much more efficient. And I've tried all these things and I go back to what works, which is primarily typing. I've tried some speech recognition on the PC a few years ago and I just found it frustrating. It was too slow. I can type pretty fast. I believe I type about 60 words a minute with three fingers. So that's pretty good.
So Sean mentioned the use of sticky keys there. For people who don't know what that is, in either Mac or Windows, and you get into the accessibility features, you'll find something called sticky keys. If you turn that on, it means that you don't have to hold down two keys at a time. So for instance, sometimes in Windows, you have to hit Alt and F at the same time. Well, if you can't do that, sticky keys enables you to hit the Alt and then the F, and it makes it a little bit easier if you have that particular difficulty. But the other thing that Sean brought up here is that, he has a different kind of disability, and he found ways of overcoming that and working around it, doing the things he wanted to do. And, you know, many of the people we've interviewed throughout the year point out the same type of thing. We focus particularly on visual disabilities, and we see that people wind up working out ways of doing things they want to do. But it's sort of like what Jose Tamayo said in our show on extreme canoeing in show 1150 last year. He said that, you know, everybody has some kind of issue to work around, and it's just a matter of how you do it and what kind of effort you put into it.
So we asked Sean how he got started working on technologies for accessibility, and it wasn't the obvious answer.
So my background's in computer science. I was a computer science undergrad. I originally wanted to make video games. What I like about my work now is this kind of balance between engineering and creativity. I think my work is very creative. And in terms of accessibility, so not obvious on the recording, but I have a physical disability. And sometimes people ask, well, is that why you got into accessibility? And I say, no, definitely not. And in fact, as a young person growing up, I said, I didn't want anything to do with that, you know, because I didn't want my career to be defined by this characteristic of who I am. And so I said, oh, I'll never do that. And then I was doing some research as an undergrad in computing and education and got involved in looking at different applications of computing technology. And I started meeting people around the community. And where I went to, I did my undergrad at University of Massachusetts. There was a local fair on accessible technologies held by the Lemelson MIT Center at Hampshire College. And so every year they would have this big expo of really interesting access technologies. And I just was really taken by the ingenuity of design. You know, they're just such exciting design challenges to how to take individual or group with very specific needs and adapt technology to work with them. So I got this bee in my bonnet a little bit about developing these types of technologies. And you know, over the next several years, investigated more into the field of human-computer interaction, but also just did a little bit of feeling around and looking at different types of community groups to work with. And so when I went to begin my PhD program, this was something I was very interested in looking at accessibility in general. And over the course of my PhD, worked with a number of different groups. And in the last few years, I started doing more and more work with blind and visually impaired people, largely because we had some great contacts in Seattle. So I did met some really great community organizations, including the Seattle Lighthouse for the Blind, the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library, who were just very excited to be in research, had very clear interests in specific areas of technology and very clear needs for that technology. And so I was able to develop a very nice and positive working relationship with these groups in the community.
I'm always fascinated with how people get involved in the careers that they're eventually in, or you know, how they change careers. And it just goes to show you there are many turning points in life, and you never know what they're going to be. So you should just be receptive to new things and be willing to try new things. And who knows where your path will take you.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is the actual content of Sean's research on making touchscreens accessible to people with visual impairments. Here's Sean giving a broad overview of his major research thrusts.
Generally work in the area of human-computer interaction and accessibility, and in particular look at input and interaction methods with computing devices. So how do we interact with computing devices, and how to make these interactions more usable, more expressive, more widely available? And the two primary areas that I've worked in the past few years have been, in general, looking at interaction in constrained situations. So if we look at, for example, someone who has a visual impairment or some other type of impairment, how do we take traditional ways of interacting with computers and make them more adaptive to differing abilities? And then the second area, which I do some work with, is looking at mobile interaction. And so when we're interacting with very small mobile devices, or we're interacting with our phone on the bus or in the car, how do we make those interactions, again, match a person's current abilities and what they can do in that situation? And my PhD work primarily looked at touch and gesture interactions among blind and visually impaired people. So how can we take all of these touch technologies, things like touch screens, but also different types of interfaces and make them usable by people who have limited vision.
And most of what he'll be talking about has to do with the touch technologies that he referred to and how the visually impaired interact with touch screens. And you may be wondering, well, what do I care about that for? Well, if you haven't noticed, touch screens are becoming more and more ubiquitous. They're at ATMs, they're at the signature pads at checkout counters, they're at the airport kiosk if you need to check in. They're even all over your kitchen appliances. And so we've put Braille sticky notes on some of our kitchen appliances, but boy, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to do that.
Yeah, that would be okay.
Sean's work on making touchscreens accessible to people with visual impairments covers four different projects. The first one studies how the blind prefer to interact with touchscreens, forming a good foundation for the other three.
The first was an investigation of how someone who's visually impaired might be able to use a touchscreen. And so if we think about how to design a touchscreen to be usable by someone who can't see the screen, you know, touchscreen interaction is inherently visual, or someone says it's the default state is for it to be visual, then it raises some interesting questions about how do you redesign a touchscreen interface for someone who can't actually see what's going on. Now we have, in 2011, we have VoiceOver, the accessibility of touchscreens is much better now than it was when we started this work. And so I want to disclaim and say that this work has been going on since before VoiceOver existed. Part of this study was looking at gestures. So we asked blind and visually impaired people to perform gestures, to invent their own set of gestures for interacting with a touchscreen. We said, well, what types of gestures would you like to use for interacting with a computer that had a touchscreen? And so the question is, looking across a group of visually impaired people and comparing them to a comparable group of sighted people, what were the sorts of differences we see in the types of gestures that they like to perform? One difference we saw is that a lot of the visually impaired people in our study preferred gestures that use physical landmarks. So touching the corners of the screen or touching the edges of the screen rather than sort of free-flowing gestures in the middle of the screen. And so this study really looked at these differences at a very low level of how a person would touch a screen and raise some questions about, well, how do we design computer systems to be more responsive or more accurate when they're being used by someone who's visually impaired?
I had never actually thought about these issues myself, but it was interesting to hear Sean talk about these things in terms of how visually impaired people use touch screens differently than people who are sighted. I mean, this really resonated with me after his talk, because I noticed that when I use a touch screen, you know, I often try to orient myself by the corners or the sides or some fraction of a distance from an edge or something like that. And so I would kind of use it very differently than other folks might if they could see the touch screen.
And even if a lot of blind people knew this about themselves, isn't it nice that somebody who's working on designing touch screens for ability to be used by the blind has actually studied this and quantified it and will be able to implement some new approaches using the information that they've gotten? So the second project has to do with design for mobile devices, those smartphones all over the place that have touch screens.
The second study I'll be talking about is looking at ways to design an accessible touchscreen-based mobile phone. So this, again, was before VoiceOver was popular, but to ask the question of, well, how do we design from the ground up a mobile phone that's usable by someone who's blind when you have only a flat screen? So taking away all the buttons with a you know, to start with the most base case or the most challenging case. And how do we use gestures and how do we use audio to interact with applications on the phone?
For people who don't know, I presume many people do, but for those that don't, VoiceOver is the speech synthesis system that comes along with all of the Apple devices, the iTouch, the iPhones, Macintosh computers. This is kind of their version of JAWS, but it's built right into the operating system. So this enables those devices to give audible feedback to people who are visually impaired. And in conjunction with some of the finger and hand gestures, you're quite able to operate many of these touchscreen devices like the iPad, the iPhone, etc.
So project number three is working to actually improve accessibility of touchscreens.
The third study I'll be talking about is more recent work that I conducted in collaboration with Microsoft Research. And we were looking in particular at how, building off this prior work about how to build an accessible touchscreen and demonstrating that it's possible, how do we then make these interfaces more efficient and more usable? And this study in particular is looking at how a blind person can, again, use a completely flat touchscreen to explore spatial information, in our case, maps, and how different ways of interacting with that touchscreen could help make interaction faster, so make it easier to explore a map, but also to increase spatial understanding and spatial memory. So we had people browse different types of touchscreen maps on a talking touchscreen and looked at how these different approaches affected how they understood the layout of the map, how they remembered the layout of the map later.
Yeah, it was interesting to listen to Sean's presentation on this aspect of his work. You know, you think about a map, it's not quite so easy. It's just moving your finger around to find something because there's a lot of detail on a map, and you can be getting a lot of extraneous information just to find the city or the river or the street that you're looking for by moving around. So he came up with some very novel ideas for making that search process and process of figuring out what the layout of the map was a lot more efficient and a lot more easy to use for someone who can't see what's on the screen.
And then project number four gets really exciting, where he's extended all of the work that he talked about earlier into interactions in the real world. So you walk up to the ATM machine, it's not your personal smartphone. How are you going to interact with that touchscreen?
And then the last project that I'll primarily talk about is looking at how we can use some of these techniques of touch and gesture as a way not just to interact with a computer or not just to interact with a touchscreen, but to interact with objects in the everyday environment. So rather than using a touchscreen, we built some hardware prototypes that use a camera. So you can imagine a camera perhaps that you wear on your body as a pendant, or perhaps that you would have on your mobile device that you could now point out at the world and actually use the camera and use computer vision and computer gesture tracking techniques to actually explore documents. So the demo I'll show in my talk is using a camera that's mounted on a desk to scan, recognize paper documents and paper maps, but also to be able to use your hands to explore. So you can, for example, put down a paper map on the desk, feel the map with your hands, not a Braille map, but just something from a standard printer, and actually touch the map and get feedback again about the layout of objects on the screen. So the idea here is now that we've shown that touch and gesture can be a usable form of interaction for people who are visually impaired, what are all the cool things that we can do with it? And part of it is, how can we take those advantages and bring them out into the often inaccessible world? So the camera actually is doing a lot of heavy lifting in terms of watching your hands, figuring out where your hands are, and also recognizing text in the environment. So doing OCR of the documents to tell you what's there. So this last project I'm talking about is an ongoing project. We've been working on it primarily since I started my new job at UMBC and trying to get some students and now we're starting to collaborate with the NFB in Maryland to get some more feedback and figure out what's the right way to build this technology.
The NFB he's working with is the National Federation of the Blind, and they were the developers of the putting the Kurzweil reading system and OCR system into mobile phones. But anyway, I thought this was a fascinating part of his research. This is a real interesting method for visually impaired people to interact with the real world, as he says, and not just the device that's specially made for you or has some special software for you. You know, right now, this technology is a little bit bulky and, you know, it needs a big computer, a lot of horsepower. But as computer vision improves and you know what's going to happen in the next few years, things will get smaller, lighter, less expensive. I think this will be a really interesting technology to follow.
Now for this week's high-tech item. Sean competed in the Imagine Cup, sponsored annually by Microsoft. And if you've never heard of the Imagine Cup, it's really cool. And so I, of course, went to their website where they say the Microsoft Imagine Cup is the world's premier student technology competition. We invite all eligible students to use their imagination and passion to create a technology solution that addresses the Imagine Cup theme. And in 2012, that will be Imagine a World Where Technology Helps Solve the Toughest Problems. In 10 years, the Imagine Cup has grown to be a truly global competition focused on finding solutions to real-world problems. Since 2003, over 1.4 million students have participated in the Imagine Cup, with 358,000 students representing 183 countries and regions registering for the Imagine Cup 2011 competition. Sean really enjoyed it.
Some work that I had done that I have not mentioned yet in this interview was actually looking, again, if we look at touchscreens and making them more accessible, once we solve that problem, the question is, what kinds of interesting things can we do with them? And so another project I've been working on in collaboration with a student, Kristen Shinohara at the University of Washington, has been, how can we take accessible touchscreens and use them to improve collaboration? And particularly, we've been looking at students in classrooms. So how can a blind student in a classroom become more engaged in group work and group activities? And so this was a project that we submitted to the Imagine Cup, which is an annual event sponsored by Microsoft. Go to imaginecup.com if you're interested. It's a yearly competition focusing on the design of technologies to help solve what they refer to as the world's toughest problems. And so in 2010, there was an accessibility challenge. The organizers were looking for design prototypes and ideas to help solve challenges related to accessibility and particularly related to learning. And so we developed a prototype of this project and were able to compete in the international finals of the Imagine Cup, which was pretty great because we got to go to Warsaw, Poland in the middle of the summer and Got to meet a lot of great people. And so this is a competition that's open to students, certainly college students, undergraduate and graduates. I believe high school students may also be able to participate. And I highly encourage anyone who is interested in designing technology to participate. It was a really great experience, and there were a lot of excellent projects, including the project which won the Accessibility Challenge, which was about improving note-taking support for low-vision students. So some really great work from Arizona State University. But it was a really great opportunity to show off cool ideas and get to meet competitors from all over the world. So competitors from dozens of different countries showing off their great ideas for how technology can help solve tough problems.
That had to be pretty cool. Sean's been involved in obviously doing this XS technology for a very long time. And, it's kind of interesting being able to participate in forums like this where you meet other people with very different and interesting ideas who are just as charged up about what they're doing. And I would imagine the interactions and what comes out of these things can be really terrific and change a lot of lives someday.
Yeah, he wasn't quite sure about who all was eligible. It turns out that anybody who's a student in a high school, college, or graduate school worldwide is eligible. And if you missed the link he gave for the Imagine Cup, it's www.imaginecup.com, all one word. As usual, we will put links to everything in the show notes for this show at our website at www.viewpointsplus.net. If you want to learn more about Sean's research activities.
So the best way to learn more about my research would be to look at my personal website, which is, my name is Sean Kane, and my website is seankane.net. That's seankane.net.
And he was a really fun and interesting guy, so I would encourage you to check out his website, see what kind of research he's up to, how it's progressing, maybe even contact him if you want to learn more or have some interesting ideas, and maybe we'll hear from him in the future.
I'm sure he'll be coming up with all sorts of great novel technologies and ideas. We're really excited to see what he comes up with. And Jeff Bigham, and thank you to Jeff for introducing us to Sean, because we would have never known about him if Jeff hadn't contacted us. So thank you, Jeff, too. That's it for this week's show. If you're looking for it in the archives, it's number 1204. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about navigating cities and beyond. And we will speak with Claudia Folska, whose research involves how the visually impaired navigated in the man-made environment. Applications of her research include ways to make it easier to do so. In addition, she founded iCycle, an organization that arranges for group tandem rides with blind stokers, and biked across America and then separately from Pakistan to China. So we think that'll be a really interesting program as well. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to viewpoints@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, produced by Peter Torpy and Nancy Goodman Torpy in collaboration with WXXI Reach Out Radio. To subscribe to the podcast, access a full archive of shows and show notes, or to find out more, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.